I'd like to welcome everyone to our next episode of Two Men in a Bible Fighting the Cosmic Battle. And I'm Jamie Sanchez, and this is Bob Brandon, Pastor Bob Brandon. And we talked in our last podcast about, you know, how the title of this podcast is really, you know, relevant to what we're reading right now. You know, the cosmic battle is this is a very good example of it that we're watching unfold.
Yeah, and let me interject here, because you just looked at me kind of weird, like, man, Bob's not even paying attention. Here's what I was actually looking at, because you see the girl right there in the blue dress and mm-hmm. the artwork there. That sculpture is called Joy, and Catherine got that for our household because that's how she sees herself. You know, just open arms to God, like just total abandonment of joy, like you have saved me, you've redeemed me, you know. So it's her picture mm-hmm. of victory in the cosmic battle. So when you were, I was listening to you, I was just looking at the visual of what you were saying.
There is joy in the cosmic battle, and I think that's important to realize
that kind
too.
Of joy, you know, yeah. Where you're like, this is everything.
Right.
You know, I've been, my entire life has now been given to God. It's secure. It's, you know, total fulfillment.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not fulfillment in any other place.
No. It's empty because, and we've had that conversation before, you know, those roads just lead you further away from where you need to be. And then you have to make the same trip back again.
It's full of heartache and emptiness. You know, you don't want to get to the end of the road, i.e. your life, and realize you got nothing.
Right.
Right. Doesn't matter how many empires you built, how much gold you got nothing. You know, this life was about something else.
And we often talk about Ecclesiastes and you know, yeah, it's... I'll save that conversation for when we get there.
Okay. That's right.
But yes,
that's
it
right.
Is.
We got, I mean, how many more pages do we got?
Yeah.
We're on, you know, it looks like we're making progress. Ooh, this is our like 30th podcast. Ooh. We're on, as I look down at my Bible, we're on page 57. It's a 2,000 page book. So bit by bit.
Yep.
But God's word is a meal you can chew on. You don't swallow that thing all at once.
No, and it's as Amy was talking at church, you know, I thought that was exciting that our new children's program, she said, you know, and as Bob said, it's always best to begin at the beginning.
That made me happy.
Mm-hmm. Because you have to know the story. You have to know who you're building a relationship with, and the healthy fear that needs to exist, and the respect and the love and the reverence and the understanding of His sovereignty and the understanding of His grace for us and what He's actually done over this whole time period for us. And if you don't know the story, how can you understand that?
Yeah, how can you understand your place in the story and all that goes with it? That's right.
So we're gonna be reading Genesis chapter 32 and 33 on this episode.
We'll take both these at once.
And continue the plight of Jacob.
Let's go. So Genesis 32. Now, as Jacob went on his way, the angels of God met him. I gotta pause. I mean, I don't think I've interrupted one podcast.
We haven't taken one rabbit trail, you're right.
Is that not the cosmic battle? Whoa, whoa, whoa. All of a sudden, you know, you just, oh, this is a human story. Jacob's going back to meet Abraham, but whoa. Or I mean Isaac. Whoa, 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 there's angels here watching this whole thing. So let's read on. Jacob said when he saw them, "This is God's camp." So he named that place Mahanaim. Then Jacob sent messengers before him to his brother Esau in the land of Seir, the country of Edom. He also commanded them, saying, "Thus you shall say to my lord Esau, thus says your servant Jacob, I have sojourned with Laban and stayed until now. I have oxen and donkeys and flocks and male and female servants. I have sent to tell my lord that I may find favor in your sight." The messengers returned to Jacob, saying, "We came to your brother Esau, and furthermore, he is coming to meet you, and 400 men are with him."
Uh-oh.
Men. Then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed, and he divided the people who were with him, the flocks and the herds and the camels, into two companies. For he said, if Esau comes to the one company and attacks it, then the company which is left will escape. And Jacob said, "O God of my father Abraham, and God of my father Isaac, O Lord, who said to me, return to your country and to your relatives, and I will prosper you. I am unworthy of all the loving kindness and of all the faithfulness which you have shown to your servant. For with my staff only I crossed this Jordan, and now I've become two companies. Deliver me, I pray, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, that he will come and attack me, and the mothers with the children. For you said, I will surely prosper you and make your descendants as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude." So he spent the night there. Then he selected from what he had with him as a present for his brother Esau 200 female goats, 20 male goats, 200 ewes, and 20 rams, 30 milking camels and their colts, 40 cows and 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys and 10 male donkeys. And he delivered them into the hands of his servants, every drove by itself. And he said to his servants, "Pass on before me, put a space between droves." And he commanded the one in front, saying, "When my brother Esau meets you and asks you, saying, to whom do you belong and where are you going and to whom do these animals in front of you belong, then you shall say, these belong to your servant Jacob. It's a present sent to my lord Esau. And behold, he also is behind us." Then he commanded also the second and the third and all those who followed the drove, saying, "After this manner you shall speak to Esau when you find him. And you shall say, behold, your servant Jacob also is behind us. For he said, I will appease him with the present that goes before me. Then afterward I'll see his face. Perhaps he will accept me." So the present passed on before him, while he himself spent the night in the camp. Now he arose that same night and took his two wives and his two maids and his 11 children across the ford of the Jabbok. He took them and sent them across the stream, and he sent across whatever he had. Then Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until daybreak. When he saw that he had not prevailed against him, he touched the socket of his thigh. So the socket of Jacob's thigh was dislocated while he wrestled with him. Then he said, "Let me go, for the dawn is breaking." But he said, "I'll not let you go unless you bless me." So he said to him, "What's your name?" He said, "Jacob." He said, "Your name shall no longer be Jacob, but Israel. For you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed." Then Jacob asked him and said, "Please tell me your name." But he said, "Why is it that you ask my name?" And he blessed him there. So Jacob named the place Peniel, for he said, "I have seen God face to face, yet my life has been preserved." Now the sun rose upon him just as he crossed over Peniel, and he was limping on his thigh. Therefore, to this day, the sons of Israel do not eat the sinew of the hip, which is on the socket of the thigh, because he touched the socket of Jacob's thigh and the sinew of his hip. Then Jacob lifted his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau was coming, 400 men with him. So he divided the children among Leah and Rachel and the two maids. He put the maids and their children in front. Sorry. And Leah and his her children next, and Rachel and Joseph last. But he himself passed on ahead of them and bowed down to the ground 7 times until he came near to his brother. Then Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. And he lifted his eyes and saw the women and children and said, "Who are these with you?" So he said, "The children whom God has graciously given your servant." Then the maids came near with their children and they bowed down. Leah likewise came near with her children and they bowed down. Afterward, Joseph came near with Rachel and they bowed down. And he said, "What do you mean by all this company which I have met?" And he said, "To find favor in the sight of my Lord." But Esau said, "I have plenty, my brother. Let what you have be your own." Jacob said, "No, please. If now I have found favor in your sight, then take my present from my hand, for I see your face as one sees the face of God, and you have received me favorably. Please take my gift which has been brought to you, because God has dealt graciously with me, because I have plenty." Thus he urged him, and he took it. Then Esau said, "Let us take our journey and go, and I'll go before you." But he said to him, "My Lord knows that the children are frail, but the flocks and herds which are nursing are a care to me. And if they're driven hard, one day all the flocks will die. Please, let my Lord pass on before his servant, and I'll proceed at my leisure, according to the pace of the cattle that are before me, and according to the pace of the children, till I come to my Lord at Seir." Esau said, "Please let me leave with you some of the people who are with me." But he said, "What need is there? Let me find favor in the sight of my Lord." So Esau returned that day on his way to Seir. Jacob journeyed to Sukkot and built for himself a house, made booths for his livestock. Therefore the place is named Sukkot. Now Jacob came safely to the city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, when he came from Paddan Aram and camped before the city. He bought the piece of land where he had pitched his tent for the hand of the sons of Hamor, Shechem's father, for 100 pieces of money. Then he erected there an altar and called it El Elohim Israel. How'd I do?
Well.
All right.
You did well. You're
a
good
reader.
You're
so slow.
You're a good reader.
So slow.
You know, it's... As you see Jacob's humility develop over the last 2 chapters, you know, his prayer in chapter 31, verse 26, where is it? We just read it last podcast, but mm-hmm. I'm really seeing Jacob's humility develop as his relationship with God is revealed, and as he goes through that process that we talked about in the last episode, from belief to knowledge to love.
Yeah, you know, you're really making a great point. I'm going to tweak it just a little bit, but your point is really well made in that, you know, as we said, I think, off the air, when we were talking in between podcasts, what God needs is not really a guy who's prominent in the world. He doesn't need a guy to have a lot of money. He doesn't need to have a guy that has a lot of whatever you want to fill in the blank with.
Right.
What he needs is just a faithful heart. And a gigantic portion of a faithful heart is humility. Mm-hmm. So he's bringing Jacob to realize that this all depends on God, not what Jacob's achieved. Or, you know, as I read it, I'm almost embarrassed for Jacob being so obsequious to Esau. Mm-hmm. Oh, my Lord, my Lord. And you're going, hey, Esau's a dweeb.
Right.
Man, that guy sold his birthright for nothing, for a bowl of soup. And I understand he's a powerful guy.
Right.
Because he's, you know, part of Abraham's line, and God had blessed him in certain ways. But he's not the guy to fear. Right. God is the guy to fear. You know, what's with all this trying to appease Esau? Esau himself says, I don't need all this.
Right.
Stuff.
I don't need any of it.
Right? And Jacob urges him, and then Jacob won't even go with him. You know, Esau's going, oh, come on, let's go. And Jacob's still afraid of him. You know, no, you go ahead. I can't keep up. You know, I got little kids. And
right.
He can keep up.
Right.
You know, that's all, you know, pardon the language. It's all BS.
Right.
He's fearing Esau and not God. But he's going to get there.
Right. And
he's going to get there.
You know, Jacob's blessing becomes more obvious as I watch this unfold. You know, it's very obvious that Jacob is blessed and that this, well, we all know the rest of the story, why this is so important at this point in time.
Yeah.
But if we were just watching it unfold here, we wouldn't see the 12 tribes that are coming. We wouldn't know that.
See
we
the whole story.
Right.
That's right.
And you have, back to what we were saying last podcast, you really have to understand the story, and you've shared that with me, and that's something that I incorporate into my world and my family's world, is to understand what's being written down here, and understand who God is, because he gives us a pretty good example of himself as we read these 2,000 pages, and he gives us a pretty good outline to how we're supposed to live. But you know, I think sometimes, you know, I know for me, I miss stuff like this, you know, as I'm reading through the Bible, when you miss the blessings and the humility, you know, that is being displayed here. Because yeah, Jacob, I don't think he had to kowtow to Esau, but obviously that's what he was supposed to do, because
he's afraid of him.
Mm-hmm.
He's afraid of his brother. And I understand why. I mean,
right.
Esau was going to kill him. But the big picture for the reader is God has completely pacified Esau. Esau doesn't, at this point, have one violent concern about Jacob. He's just glad to see him, it seems like. I mean, he's one of these guys, you know, easily gets mad and then forgets about it the next day, it looks like, you know, on the human level. But God has completely pacified Jacob's biggest fear.
And it's been some time now. It's 20 years, right, since his departure?
Absolutely. I mean, 14 years for the wives, and then he's got to work more. That's right, 20 years.
And I really like the brotherly part of that I see. That
says they hug each other, you know, he kisses, he falls on his neck, they embrace. He's looking around, who's all this? Oh man, my nephews and nieces. And
right, and it took me by, you know, not surprised, because I've obviously read it before, but as you reread it again.
It would take the reader, it's supposed to take the reader by surprise, like, ooh, man, this was Jacob's biggest enemy. This guy wanted to kill him. I mean, Laban was a jerk, but Esau could kill you.
Yeah, and
you're afraid of him.
And he was a hunter.
Yeah, but nothing doing.
And here
Esau's
he comes.
Esau's totally.
Here he comes with 400 guys.
Yeah.
And
yeah, 400 guys.
You know, and again, the you see the seed is starting to really flourish. The seed of the woman is, you know, as you pointed out to me, and it's
that's right.
Go ahead.
Well, and Jacob develops this elaborate plan. You know, I'll send out this group first, and then this group, and this group. You know, he's gonna humanly do all he can to soften his angry brother with goodness. It's like all irrelevant. And Esau doesn't even need this stuff. It's almost like the way Moses has presented, Esau takes it to shut his brother up, you know, but he doesn't really need it.
Right.
And you can see Jacob doesn't really believe him.
And Jacob, as you pointed out a couple of podcasts ago, is not a little bitty just guy that,
well,
you
Jacob's
know,
a stud.
Yeah, he's moving rocks. He's, boulders, not just rocks.
Yeah. So let's do this. Let's get back to the text. And, you know, in chapter 32, verse 1, you know, we paused here as we read it, but let's read it again. Now, as Jacob went on his way, the angels of God met him. Now, it looks like, as you get to the book of Deuteronomy, it turns out that the world is... Remember how we described this in church? We really haven't done it on a podcast, but the world is has a hierarchy to it, right? The authority structure, the universe, and we go over that all the time. So, but the administration of what we know as the world, like the earth, you know, rivers, mountains, that, and then the nations that live upon them. Here's Russia, here's China, here's the United States, and on and on. It looks like that's all been determined when you get to the book of Deuteronomy by God. And he has set up angels to administrate those geographical regions. So it looks like here comes Jacob coming back and, whoa, he's crossing the border.
Right.
And here's all these angels, you know, guarding this land. It's just like we said, as we interrupted our reading, it's a cosmic world. It's not just all Jacob and Laban and Jacob and Esau. There's an entire angelic realm involved in this. And so when he meets this camp of angels, that's really significant for the story. All you get is one verse saying, hey, he met these guys.
But the significance...
It should have clued him in. Hey, God's got this whole thing. You're afraid of Esau with his 400 guys? Well, I got my angels all over this place. And besides that, I'm omnipotent. You know, I don't even need the angels, really. But you know, as far as revealing the bigger picture of what's going on, Jacob gets to see that even before he goes in there. So let me make a couple points of that. One, I don't want people to overemphasize that. In that, you know, they get up and face their day and pray about the angels guarding this and that. You can, in my opinion, not ignore that, but it's never given from God's instructions that that's a realm you need to meddle with.
Right.
It's a realm you need to be aware of, but not to meddle in it. Don't try and manipulate the angels and so on. Pray the angels' protection over you. Okay, that's never presented in the text. You want God's protection over you. And the intermediaries that he uses is often angels. But simply be aware that the world is two things at once. It's completely material, and there's a whole spiritual realm that goes along with that. And both are 100% true. So here's Jacob being made aware. You know, don't forget, again, there's a whole nother world here, and I got it. My angels are right here. You're safe.
What? Where is it at in the Bible, Bob, that it talks about let him see what I see and the whole mountainside?
Yeah, that's in Kings. In the book of Kings. And I'm not really dividing now between First and Second Kings, but that's Elisha. And he's with his servant Gehazi, and there's an entire, they're being attacked by the Arameans, and it's just two of them. And Elisha's not concerned. He's going, our guys way outnumber, you know, their guys. And God opens the eyes of his servant to see there's thousands of angels there.
And that's the same here, and I believe it's the same today.
I do too, and when you say that, I make no hesitation or pause to modern thinking, you know, our powers that be, our scientists and so on, there are angels.
Yeah.
And all our scientists and physicists can figure out the material world, and I love that. I love to know that stuff, but that's half of the picture. That's the material
at
world.
Most.
And I unhesitantly say, there's an angelic realm.
Mm-hmm.
Full bore. And I believe in that.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, but it's not a realm that believers are ever called to interact with. It's just be aware of it. But it's not a place to interact with the angels.
And what a beautiful prayer. Jacob's prayer. I mean...
Great, Jimmy.
I think this is something that each of us, we can incorporate these same things as we pray, because, you know, I thought it was beautiful as I read it. I was like, wow.
Beautiful in its I would say, in its truth.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
The acknowledgement of God.
Yes.
Here's who you are. You know, at Jacob's
no
day
fluff.
And age.
There's no fluff.
No, it's very direct.
Right.
It would take you 15, 20 seconds to pray it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, and it correctly acknowledges God. I mean, he's not saying Jesus Christ, because he never heard of that.
Right.
But what he does know is, oh, God of my father Abraham, God of my father Isaac, oh, Lord. Okay, so he's dead on in correctly identifying God. And then, who said to me? And he repeats that a couple times in the prayer. You said.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not manipulation, but it's based on what you have told me. Here's my prayer.
Mm-hmm.
You said you were with me. You said you were going to do this and that. And I think that is the strongest way to pray that there is. Not like, oh God, make this deal happen for me so I can be
right.
a millionaire.
Right.
Where did he say he was going to do that? You know, with Jacob, he made some, I am with you. And Jacob correctly interpreted some of that as blessing. No doubt. You know, God's building an entire nation, so he needs to fund the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So no doubt Jacob is right in assuming some of those things. And every Christian can assume some blessings from God, but you got to put yourself in the right place in the story. We're not in the place in the unfolding of God's plan where it's necessarily his desire to give you billions of dollars.
Right.
Okay? We're in the conflict of the two ages. You've seen me draw this out
mm-hmm.
before, and our listeners may not have, but you live in the confluence of two ages at once, you know, this present evil age and the age to come, and we're right in the overlap of that. Your job, what God has promised you, is that he's your God. He's going to save you. He's going to resurrect you from the dead. You're going to reign forever with him. Okay? That's what you can put that in the bank.
Right.
Now, the day-to-day stuff, you know, just walk with him faithfully, and he'll unfold before you. And quite often it is blessing.
Mm-hmm.
There are other people that are on the path of martyrdom. Peter was killed. James was killed. John was exiled to the island of Patmos. Paul had a very difficult and bitter life. Job had a tough life for a lot of it. You know, you may be called to that. It doesn't matter. In the end, you get everything.
Right.
That's what he's called us to. But Jacob's prayer is precisely theologically accurate.
I agree. I mean, well, I agree. Like, my opinion matters, you know.
Of course.
I don't understand the theology of it. But as I read it, I see exactly what you're saying. It is spot on.
From what God had shown him,
mm-hmm.
what he's declaring is, I'm on your path, so do your thing. That's how
yeah.
I'd summarize. And
yeah.
God is going to do exactly that.
Now, as we move forward here, though, a little twist in verse 24, chapter 32. Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him. Wrestled. There comes my small town
like,
side.
Yeah, same here. My dad might say wrestled.
A man wrestled with him until daybreak. Okay, now you got to help me out there, Bob.
Well, it's not a man, as you read the story. It's God showing up again.
But what does wrestled with him mean?
Struggled. Okay, they fought.
So was Jacob. Not against him, but was Jacob resisting, or what? Why the wrestling?
It's a great question, and I wish I could answer it, you know, with 100% accuracy and go, oh, Jamie, here's what's going on. I can't say that, but the sense of the text is this. you, as the image of God, have a will. You have a mind. You have a place. And just as with our own children, like, you got three kids.
Mm-hmm.
Have any of them persuaded you of certain things that you probably weren't going to do heading into that conversation, but they laid it out in such a way, you know, that, okay. And, right. And you went with them.
Right.
And not necessarily in capitulation.
Right.
Like, okay.
Right.
But, like, all right, I'll do that for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the sense here.
Gotcha. And so
that's the sense. As a human being, you don't, you know, as you absorb God's words, absorb them for the theology,
mm-hmm.
but impose your will on them. You know, go to the Lord. I don't think it always pleases, you know, if Sophia always comes to me, my daughter is, you know, totally obsequious, you know, you're dad, whatever you say, you know, oh, okay, but hey, you know, give me something.
Right.
What do you want?
Right.
What do you want to do? What do you want to... Mm-hmm. It's that sort of...
That's what's being described?
Really, that's a really difficult balance to maintain. But you see, as the text unfolds and we get to Moses, there's a point where God's going to wipe Israel out.
Mm.
And Moses contends with him. Right? Hey, God, don't do that.
Right.
This is the result of that. You'll lose face. I mean, he argues with God. And God says, okay. And he goes with, you know, what Moses
we saw that
was saying.
With
and
Lot,
I don't want to get into discussions of human will versus mm-hmm. God's sovereignty. That's not the place for this. But all that to say, God has made us his vice regents on earth. So he'll listen to us.
And we saw it in Sodom and Gomorrah with that whole
unfolding. That's a great remembrance. That's exactly, hey, gonna wipe this out. Now here's Abraham. Whoa.
Wait.
And, you know, God listens to him.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's what's going on here. Jacob is struggling for God's blessing. And God listens to him.
And then
renames him,
right.
Israel.
Well, and
those who struggle with God.
Here's something that I not that I couldn't come to grips with, but that leaves a question in my mind. So when it's in verse 26, when it says, "Then he said, let me go, for the dawn is breaking," that's God talking right there.
That's right.
Right. He, you know, did Jacob have that a tight hold? I mean, was it a wrestle? You know,
it's all put in. You know, let me be theological. You know, if I'm in my classroom, it's all put in anthropomorphic terms. Okay, but God.
I was talking anthropomorphic yesterday.
Yeah, there you go. But if God, you know, you could blink him out of existence.
Right.
It's not really. I mean, he's allowing himself to be wrestled with.
Gotcha.
It's accommodation. He's accommodating himself to.
So
Jacob.
In a sense, as you know, I can remember, I have three boys, so mm-hmm. I've wrestled with all of them
yeah.
when they were little, and
yeah.
and I'd let them hold me down, and
it's
I'd say,
exactly what's
okay,
going on.
It's time for me to go to bed.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, and then if they don't, you know,
right.
you kind of take one little finger and sort of pin them, you know,
right.
just so you know who's
right.
really boss here.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's that very
so
much.
So it's that type of picture is what we're talking
very
about
very much
here?
So, but think of the theology of that. Like, you can interact with me. I am God, and for you to even look at me would kill you, you know, if
which,
I
yeah,
fully
which,
revealed
right.
myself.
Yeah, which we talk about here is
yeah.
as a full, you know,
I've
Jacob
seen him
realizes
face to face.
That.
Yeah, not really. You haven't really seen him face to face, but yes, he did manifest himself to you. But, you know, it's God like, look, if this was really a contest, you would not exist.
Well, what does Israel mean? I mean, Israel has...
It means struggles with God. So Jacob's being renamed, you know, here's this whole... But in a positive sense, struggles with God, you know, for his blessing, for and so on. So a very powerful passage, but I want each listener to come away remembering there's a sense in which if you don't enter into it at times, I'm not saying make this your habit, but at times enter into the Lord with struggling, you know, and to bend His will towards, you know, your desires. All of this, obviously, taken in context, you're missing something in your spiritual life. You're not as close to Him as you think, because He is approachable that way. And there are many examples of that in Scripture. But it's not wrong to struggle with Him.
And do we approach Him through prayer, Bob? Is that where we approach?
Certainly. Here, it was physical. Mm-hmm. But I think the reason it's physical there is so this would be written down, and so that readers would realize God desires the interaction. He wants that intimacy of that relationship, that there would even be struggle there.
Right, right.
Not sinful struggle.
Right.
But real imposition of will. Like, what's the context? Jacob's scared of meeting Esau.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I think he's thinking, unless you bless me, unless you're on my side, you know, unless you impose your will on my behalf, I'm not equal to the... I'm out. Esau's bigger than me.
Mm-hmm.
So, do this. And God, you know, allows that to go on for quite a while. And then, all right, I'm there for you. Not begrudgingly. Not
right.
Like he ultimately changed God's will, but there's just something in the relationship. I wish I knew how to explain it better, Jamie, but there's something there that is important for every believer to struggle with God.
Well, and I think, and maybe not the same context that you put it in before when we talked about it, but one of the consistencies that you've shared with me of Christianity is struggle. It abs, you know.
Yeah.
There.
Oh yeah, we're in the cosmic battle. You're right. In battle.
Right.
So if you're coming to Christianity with the perception that now my struggles are over, no, you've got some new ones that trump your old ones.
Right.
Your old ones are nothing compared to this. You just got put in the real battle. So until we're immediately in God's presence in heaven, there's going to be massive struggle.
And you have to engage. And we talked about that.
Fleeing, you know, that's no way to win a battle.
Mm-mm.
It can win anything to win.
You have to engage and you know, really that... I mean, if God is with us, who can be against us?
That's pretty good to say.
Are there what other takeaways, or have we missed any points here, Bob? I'm looking at my notes.
You got the prayer. We got the fact that it's a spiritual world from the first verses, and God has actually gone before Jacob and solved the whole thing. His biggest fear amounted to nothing because God had already solved that.
Well, and we're going to see Israel is coming.
That's
you know,
right.
And we're seeing the story really.
Yeah. So imagine the original readers. You know, oh, this is how we got our name.
Mm-hmm.
We struggled with God, you know, and prevailed. We came out His choice. We came out in His favor. They're reading about how they got their very name. I mean, imagine you're Jamie Sanchez. You know, imagine
right.
when did we get named Sanchez? You know, how far back does that go? Wouldn't that be
right.
kind of cool
yeah,
to know?
Yeah, that would be kind of cool to know.
You know, I don't know how you can even discern that today, but
yeah, that would be kind of cool to know.
And that's what they're learning as they are coming out of Egypt. You know, this is how you got your very name. So, it's quite a destiny. That Jacob has not just, it's not just, okay, now he's conquered Esau. It's, ooh, he's created a wide breach, you know, through the whole world that Israel's going to walk through. Mm. They've struggled with God and come out prevailed. That's really strong. I mean, what other nation on earth can say that? We've contested with God and come out
none
in his favor. Nobody.
None. None. But as the story unfolds, we obviously see why.
So, let's see. Lord, we, as your own children, realize that there will be moments in our relationship with you where we struggle. And I pray that as we enter into that struggle, we would do so completely armed with the totality of the scriptures, that we're coming to you theologically prepared. But then as we battle and wrestle, be gracious to us. Grant our desires as you impose your will upon the earth, and your kingdom come. In Jesus' name.